Hello and welcome to another episode of FPL 360. Today, Chuck and I are going to start by talking about the thriller at Anfield. I guess before we get into the details, what were you expecting in this match?
I expected a Liverpool win, but I did not expect anything close to the performance that we got.
Mohamed Salah celebrated being named PFA Player of the Year by torching his former club, Roma, at Anfield. Salah bagged an exceptional first half brace and tallied a pair of assists after the restart before Roberto Firmino headed Liverpool into a commanding 5-0 advantage. Well, the match kind of looked to be out of hand at that point. Roma got two late goals. They got a goal from Edin Dzeko and a penalty from Diego Perotti, giving them a glimmer of hope heading into next Tuesday's return leg.
Yeah, because the Champions League needed the next leg to have at least a little bit of intrigue left in it. If it was a 5-0 Liverpool win, who would watch the next game?
Yeah, so I guess what's your biggest takeaway from this match?
That a full-strength Liverpool may just have what it takes to find a way to sneak a Champions League title.
Liverpool were dealt somewhat of a blow with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain having to leave inside 20 minutes with what Jurgen Klopp reported after the match was a serious knee injury. How big of his loss is that to Liverpool going into the next leg?
I mean, considering that their midfield is already decimated, it's definitely not good at all. But considering that Liverpool has nothing to play for left in the Premier League, they can essentially rest all of their backup midfielders, toss a couple of academy players out there, and still be fine.
Yeah, we'll get in that a little bit more when we talk about their match, but we could see some names we've never heard of before this weekend. I think something also needs to be said about how good Mohamed Salah is, and I know we talk about him every week from an FPL perspective, but his first goal, I mean, was an absolute cracker, bar down from the edge of the area. His second one, I mean, it's a textbook chip. And then his assists were pretty much two FIFA assists laying across the box. Do you think where do you place him right now amongst the best players in Europe?
I mean, as of right now, if we're speaking specifically on form currently, he has to be in the same breath as Messi and Ronaldo.
I mean, his numbers are out of this world. He has 31 goals in the league. I believe he has 9 in the Champions League, 5 assists in the Champions League.
He had 10 now, I believe, right?
Or 10, yeah. I think that was actually 10. He is closing in on Liverpool's all-time scoring record in a season. And I just think it's – I don't really like the Balderrama because it's kind of a popularity contest. But if I had a vote, I would definitely be putting my – slip in Salah's category.
Yeah, if he finds a way to carry Egypt out of their group in the World Cup, I think he basically has that sealed up.
Yeah, I actually turned around today after that match and placed a bet on Egypt advancing from the group stage. That's how confident I am in Salah. We're going to move on. Before we get to the matches, we have to take a moment to talk about what's going to happen over at the Emirates.
Such a sad time for me.
Yeah, the post-Arsene Wenger countdown has begun. Wenger has decided to call his time on his Arsenal career, despite having another 18 months on his contract. So Wenger will be departing after a legendary 22-year reign as Gunners overlord, having won 3 Premier League titles and 7 FA Cup trophies, while also getting them to their only Champions League final. Wenger's been such a polarizing guy over the last couple of years, but I mean, it dates back to, you know, somewhat before our time. But I mean, what would you hope people's takeaway is from Arsene's time at Arsenal? Is,
you know, you're asking the wrong person this question, because personally, I wanted Wenger to stay just because of the fact that I think that Arsenal has a very good core to build from post-Wenger. based on the legacy that he's left at Arsenal, he may not be able to completely go toe-to-toe with Sir Alex, but legacy-wise, he's pretty damn close.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's those two in terms of Premier League managers. He pretty much revolutionized how they played. Obviously, they had the Invincibles. But I guess instead of harping on that, because that's something we'll talk about in the offseason, the thing I want to talk about before we move on is who should Arsenal look to replace him with?
I have my number one target, and that's Brendan Rodgers.
Oh, I'm sure all the Arsenal fans will love to hear that.
Hey, hear me out for a second. It's not that Brendan Rodgers was necessarily bad. It's just that he wasn't particularly ready for a job with the top six. But this Brendan Rodgers now, after time with Celtic, getting Champions League experience, being in a total position where he is the guy facing the media, he's really gotten that experience, and he has nothing left to do at Celtic. So what better than to come back and show that he can actually do it in the Premier League?
I've been really beating the drum for Eddie Howe. I think that he's run his course with Bournemouth. He's not going to have the funds to turn them into like a pseudo, you know, Leicester City or Everton, where they're going to have the money to at least go out and get one or two big names a season. He's done all he can there, and I think his attractive playing style is the kind of approach the always grumpy Arsenal fans will be happy with. And I think with the kind of players he has or would have there, I think he could be extremely successful. Maybe not in the first season. It'd be a little bit of a project, but I think he's definitely one for the future.
I mean, I think if you're going to go into the Eddie Howe bin of names, then you might as well just bring Patrick Vieira back, though.
Yeah, that was the other one. My other thought was maybe they go for, you know, an older manager like an Allegri and then kind of work Vieira in the next year or two.
Or I hope they don't do something like that. Also, I like Vieira staying in New York, so he should
do that. As someone who frequently goes to NYCFC matches, I would like Patty Boy to stay in the Big Apple. Moving right along to the main event of our podcast, we're going to talk about Game Week 36 fixtures. Having just touched on Liverpool, we will try not to rehash too much of it, but they're most likely going to be resting some of their players when they host Stoke City. So I guess from your perspective, Chuck, who starts, who sits?
Considering how the match went today, I'm assuming the entire midfield sits. I'm going to assume that Firmino and Mane also sit, but Salah plays 60 because he got subbed out.
On the back line,
it's anyone's fucking guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have no idea with the defense. I mean, you probably would see, you know, Moreno for Robertson. Maybe Gomez as well at right back for Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, the only guy from a fantasy perspective I really like that's coming in is Danny Ings. He scored last week. He should have had two. He got denied by Ben Foster just before halftime. And he's essentially the only guy on that club with something to play for in the league, as he kind of needs to show after such a long layoff that he has what it takes to remain.
Mo Salah still needs to stay ahead of Harry Kane, because we know that a 5-goal lead is not enough to deny Harry Kane the Golden Boot.
As for the Potters, a defeat here pretty much means relegation. They have 3 matches remaining, while Southampton and Swansea both have 4. So they're going to go, I'm assuming they would go all out attack. I don't really know what that means or what that'll look like, but is there, you have any inkling if you're looking for someone to stream to maybe look at Stoke City's attackers?
I mean, at this point, I'm still playing Ndiaye if I have him, because he scored last week. I don't see why he wouldn't score or assist against a Liverpool. Are we down to their D squad now?
The thing is, I don't even know if you could call it that, because like it might even be beyond that if it's going to be academy guys.
Yeah, so basically, if there's any time to start your Stoke attackers, like Ndiaye's actually been pretty consistent over the course of the season, Diouf has been on a pretty good run recently. I don't know what the hell to do with Shaqiri, because he seems to have just completely turned off from Stoke and just kind of needs to leave.
Yeah, he's kind of run his course, and I like Shaqiri as a player, but it's pretty obvious that there's not the kind of cast to keep him happy there.
Yeah, it's essentially Stoke players with something to prove, you should start in this game. Shaqiri, you should not.
Yeah, so I guess in terms of guys to look at in OFPL, is there anyone from Stoke that you would be interested in? Or is that too much of a gamble, given their form?
I mean, a Diouf punt, if you really need to make up some ground in mini leagues, there's worse things. Other than that, eh.
Yeah, I mean, Diouf's at 5.2, so that's definitely cheap for a forward. I think that kind of pretty much wraps it up with this match, though. But the one thing to will be interesting to see, like, I honestly could see Klopp just bubble wrapping his whole side just because they've had the injury bug.
That's what I'm expecting.
Burnley will be looking to get back on track at Turf Moor when they host Brighton. The Clarets are coming off a 1-1 draw at Stoke City, and after their 5-match winning streak, they are winless in their last two. Meanwhile, Brighton enter after a good result, a draw against Tottenham in their last outing.
Well, look at this. A game with two teams with nothing to play for. Honestly, I don't really see a reason to play. So, in Tauga, I'd play my Burnley defenders. I'd play Gudmundsson. I'd still play Chris Wood and Ashley Barnes, although I'm getting a little tentative about playing Chris Wood after his double game week showing.
Yeah, that was
bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, surprised is an understatement. But something does need to be said for the fact that Woods and Barnes have played a combined hand on 12 of Burnley's last 13 goals. So if they score, it's coming from them, and it's probably an assist from Gudmundsson.
I also need to take a second to make a public apology for tipping Aaron Lennon to everyone who returned a grand old, I think, like, 3 points in OFPL over the course, and hopefully Nkodu's healthy enough to take a spot in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because Kevin Long put up -6 in that first match against Chelsea, and he still finished the week with 15.25. So while I didn't think he was going to get it that way, he did exactly what I thought he would do. And it's too bad because he would have probably had like a 30-point week if not for that own goal against Chelsea.
Hey, it was a magnificent finish, just in the wrong net.
Yeah. I guess from an OFPL's perspective, the guy I like the most this week, as always, is Gudmundsson. I mean, his value at 5 million is just too good to pass up on.
And right behind him is Ashley Barnes.
Yeah. In terms of Brighton's options,
Pascal Gross.
I mean, it was weird to. Yeah, I was going to say, Gross got a boost last week with him taking that penalty. So that just furthers his stock.
Yeah, that should have been Glenn Murray's goal.
Yeah, it's a slight on Murray. So I feel like Gross is really the only guy to look at. I don't really trust the rest of them. And I don't...
I mean, in this game, I'm still... Like, I'm a Matt Ryan owner, so I'm still going to play him. Because, like, I don't think Burnley's going to rout Brighton. I just don't think either team keeps a clean sheet. Meaning... The good old infamous 1-1 draw.
Yeah, exactly. moving on to the next match. Crystal Palace are slight favorites at home against an out-of-sorts Leicester City side. Palace enter in the better form, unbeaten their last three. Meanwhile, the Foxes have not won since March. What is going on with Leicester City?
They are coming back to earth. I mean, I've been saying that I've been worried about Leicester City for a very long time. Now they're just showing their true colors. Because outside of about four players, Leicester City's not very good.
Yeah, it's weird because I was very all in on them for that double game week, and they didn't do anything. I mean, Vardy and Mahrez, I think, put up like a total of 6 points across both those matches.
Yeah,
which is very disappointing.
Vardy and Mahrez are really the only guys that I feel comfortable tipping. I mean, and especially considering this is a full strength Palace side, meaning Sacco and Tompkins are going to absorb everything in the center. Because Tompkins had, what was it, 18 clearances in their last game?
Tompkins has been absolutely exceptional in Taga. I remember writing, I think it was, I don't know, maybe like game week 29 in my column, saying to pick him up for the end of season run. And the last 2 weeks, he's had 21 and 25 points. He has a total of 30 clearances over the last two matches.
So guys, if Tompkins is still somehow available in your league and you don't have him for your runs, you need to go get him now.
Yeah, I don't know really what to say about this match because it should have goals, but then again, as we saw some of the results last week, there weren't any. So I'm in a little bit of a pickle because I have, obviously I'm not going to be dumping Milo because of his value, but I have Zaha, Mahrez, and Vardy all in my lineup, and I want to shed at least one of them. And I'm not sure if I want to double up on Leicester or if I want to go 1-1.
Honestly, I see this being a meaningless tie. As I honestly, at this point in the season, when it comes to teams that have nothing to play for like this, I just can't see goals.
Yeah, I mean, my thought right now is probably to go with to shed Mahrez and then stick with Vardy and Zaha, just because Vardy's been in better form than Mahrez. But yeah, no, I mean, it's going to be weird because Leicester looked bad last time out. The only guy who had a good match was Wilfred Ndidi, who's back from his ban.
Yeah, I mean, Ndidi's really good, and he's probably not going to be at Leicester after this season.
Yeah, I would say he'd be a good fit for that Arsenal midfield. The next match, or the Liverpool one. Honestly, anyone who needs a defensive midfielder. Huddersfield are back in action after a week off, and they return for arguably their biggest game of the season. The Terriers sit 6 points above the drop zone with 4 matches remaining and face an Everton side that's without a defeat in their last 3 matches. Now, the importance here is just looking at Huddersfield's schedule from here on out.
Huddersfield has to win this.
Rather daunting, to say the least. They will be facing Man City, at Chelsea, home against Arsenal in their last 3 matches. So it's pretty much do or die for David Wagner's side.
Yeah, I think they're going to die.
Yeah, so this leads me to my bold take of the week. I think Alex Pritchard's going to get a goal or an assist, and I think Huddersfield's going to win.
So here's the thing. I hope you're right, but I really think you're wrong. I have not seen anything that there is to like about Huddersfield recently. And while Everton hasn't been great, they've been pretty serviceable.
Yeah, this is nothing really to do with Everton. It's more so the fact that I've been looking at Pritchard's numbers, and over his last five matches, he's created 8 chances, taken 7 shots, and whiffed in 20 crosses. Now, normally on a team that has a forward who's somewhat serviceable, that's going to result in at least a goal or an assist. So I think he's due, and you know he's only 8% owned. So if you're looking for a real punt, he definitely gets my stamp of approval this week.
You ain't getting mine.
Yeah, I can tell you're doing a very good job of letting that on nonchalantly.
I love Alex Pritchard. You're aware that I love him.
No, I know. I know you do.
But I do not like this team.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip side, the argument really stands in support of your point with Everton. They've only given up 1 goal in their last 3 matches. They kept clean sheets against Newcastle and Liverpool, and they drew 1-1 at Swansea City. Jordan Pickford's been in good form, so it's going to be tough for them to get it done, but I think David Wagner's side has shown up at home when they've needed to. And just coming off a week break, I think they'll be up for this match with Everton coming off somewhat of a short week, having played on Monday.
Yeah, I don't think it matters because Everton has depth.
Yeah, I mean, it's a match that people might want to gloss over at first, but it is pretty much, if Huddersfield lose, they're pretty much going to get relegated.
I don't think so, because the teams below them are just that bad.
But I mean, so if they don't take any points from the next four matches, right now they are 6 points above the drop zone. But you have Southampton and Swansea playing each other at one point, I think in the last match of the season. And Swansea's fixtures aren't as bad as Huddersfield's is. So, I mean, it's going to be close, but I think they kind of have to win to have any sort of confidence going into the last 3 weeks.
I mean, that's fair. I think that they should probably at least try and pick up a point. I can't tell you where the goal's going to come from, though.
Yeah, I don't. That's why I'm saying I think if they score, it's going to somehow come through Pritchard. I don't know if he'll be a scorer or if he'll get an assist, but, I mean, he's pretty much led them in chances. He's led them in all offensive stats lately. So, I mean, you know, the numbers show he'll be the guy to pop up with the difference maker. Moving on to a club that is pretty much set for relegation. Last place, West Brom, will travel to Newcastle. However,
got that new manager bump.
However, as I mentioned on our last podcast, we'll slightly hinted at but did not take a stance. The Baggies pulled off another tricky, tricky result with a draw at Liverpool, meaning they've now beaten United and drawn Liverpool in their last two matches.
So, you're wrong about Jay Rodriguez, but Solomon Rondon.
Yeah, I mean, Rondon keeps producing. This week, it's kind of, it's funny because the Baggies literally just turned it, they just fired Alan Pardew like 3 weeks too late.
I honestly don't think that anything they could do would actually keep them up at this point, because they screwed up when they hired Alan Pardew in the first place.
Yeah, they have played 35 matches, so they have 3 remaining. Right now they're on 25 points, and they are 8 points below safety. So they'd have to win out, and they'd have to have Swansea, Southampton, and Stoke or Huddersfield all lose out.
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah. I guess with that said, are you in favor of backing Rondon again? I mean, he's been producing lately. Obviously, you're playing him in Tauga.
I have to back him. I actually drafted him at the beginning of the year in Tauga. I dropped him at certain points during the year, but it's the only way to at least salvage something from my draft.
Yeah, I mean, the guy I was looking at in this match in terms of a streaming option or if you need to save a bunch of money in OFPL and feel like making a punt would be Chris Brunt, just because West Brom have scored the majority of their goals from set pieces and crosses this season, and Brunt's their primary set piece taker slash provider of crosses. So, one would lead to believe that he would be getting assists if they score.
Yeah, no, he'll definitely get something in this match. Newcastle at home is going to be tough, but again, this is one of those matches where neither team really has anything to play for.
Well, it's kind of funny with West Brom, just because you have caretaker manager Darren Moore kind of coaching to potentially get himself a full-time job, but you also have players like Rodriguez and Rondon pretty much doing an audition to see if they can move and stay in the Premier League next season.
Yeah, I mean, West Brom has a lot of players that will get moves. Number one, Tottenham target Johnny Evans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I mean, there's something to be said. I could see Craig Dawson ending up on a newly promoted club because he's good at the back. And, I mean, they signed Hagazi to a couple-year contract, so unless someone comes in to bid, he'll probably be there next season. And I guess the only thing that is wavering my confidence a little bit in West Brom, besides the fact that they haven't been good for the entire season, is the fact that Newcastle have only conceded 16 goals at home this season, which puts them, I believe, in the top 8 in terms of defensive home record.
Yeah, I mean, they are very good. I just don't know what to think of them at this point now that they're fully safe. Because they're running out Slimani to try and see what they actually have in him. And he's just stinking up the field.
Yeah, I mean, he actually didn't look terrible against Everton. His movement definitely gave Jagielka and Keane something to think about. He didn't have much, though.
So here's my issue. Watching that game, as soon as he went up top, Newcastle got cross-happy. Newcastle is not a crossing team. They are better when they keep the ball on the ground and pick their spots with Shelvey hitting long balls. And they got 100% away from what has been their identity for this run.
Yeah, the other thing, too, was I had tipped Perez, and the way Perez plays, it doesn't really work well with a target guy like Soleimani. So I think he only ended, with like 7 points. And, I mean, I don't know. Then again, it was Soleimani's first start, so I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he's, you know, been out for so long and he's only been used as a substitute. I'll give him one more match before I kind of say, you know, he's done. He won't be playing in England next season. Because it seems like his time at Leicester is pretty much cooked after his failed big money move.
Yeah.
Southampton square off with Bournemouth, knowing that they have to win to have a chance to legitimately stay up. Do you think that the Saints will get it done at home?
I just don't know what to think of them. Like, they should be good. They should be able to pick up this result. But as everything has shown, they come so, so close and then fuck it up at the last minute.
Yeah, I mean, lucky for them, they're catching Bournemouth at a time where the Cherries are without a win in their last 4, and they've looked rather disjointed. I don't really know what's wrong with them. They just haven't been getting it done. They don't
have a striker.
So they're getting them at a good time. I mean, I would hope to see Charlie Austin in the starting 11. If they're going to have any chance at winning, it's going to come through him. I don't have any faith in Gabbiadini. Shane Long is pretty much just a training cone that can run really fast. Carrillo, I don't know why he went there. If you think about it, he went from Monaco. I know he wasn't playing that much, but still.
Yeah, I'd rather sit on the bench at Monaco than play for Southampton.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing working in Southampton's favor is Bournemouth have failed to win in their they've lost 10 of their last 11 away matches. So that definitely works in their favor. I feel like this is going to be a draw, though.
Again, I unfortunately just feel like everything's going to be a draw in these random mid-table clashes.
Yeah, I mean, neither of these teams gives me any confidence.
Just for the fact that Southampton are scoring goals, I guess they have the edge at home.
I mean, in their last couple home matches, I mean, outside of their 0-0 draw with Stoke, I think they've scored at least one goal in their last 5. So they have been finding it, and obviously they had those 2-3-2 defeats, and then they lost to Chelsea again in the FA Cup over the weekend. So I don't know. I might watch this match. I might not, though, because
I hope I don't.
I feel like this is gonna be like one of those like minute and a half highlights when they put out the game week clips after the action wraps up.
It will not be a good one.
Moving on to the next match, Chelsea travel to Swansea City, needing a win to keep pace with fourth place Tottenham. The big thing here, Antonio Conte has a decision to make up front, whether to revert to a two-man attack or to pick Morata or Giroud to lead the line.
I mean, at this point, I don't know how you can start Morata with how well Giroud's been performing and the fact that, unfortunately, Chelsea are inching their way back into the Champions League race.
Yeah, they have turned it on. They were in turmoil. I'm not sure. I mean, the really only change has been... I mean, the only change has really just been Giroud.
I mean, considering that their biggest change from the offseason was exiling Diego Costa, that's enough of one.
Yeah, I believe Giroud scored in the FA Cup match, and then obviously he got those two off the bench. So he scored three in his last two matches against Southampton over the span of, I think, 10 days. I would not be surprised to see him get the start up top again. Swansea got clubbed at Man City last weekend, and I have a feeling they could ship a few this weekend against Chelsea as well.
Yeah. I do think that he'll end up being decent this weekend, especially since Swansea's been flat.
Yeah, they had the new manager bump, and then they've come crashing back down to earth. If you look at them in the form table over the last six matches, they have one win, three draws, and two losses. They've conceded 10 goals and only scored six.
Yeah, I was going to say, City just absolutely ruined their goal differential.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only guy who had a nice day was Fabianski, who has got to be like the hardest working man in the Premier League with that back line.
Only Jack Butlin can come close.
I guess the big thing for Chelsea in terms of fantasy is Emerson should get another start at left wing back. Yeah, with Marcus Alonso still banned, serving the last game of his three-match retroactive suspension. He's going to be one of the guys in my column that will come out tomorrow. I like him. He did enough against Burnley. He got an assist. He looked pretty much just like a faster, less pass-oriented version of Alonso out there. So while he didn't really have the chemistry with Hazard in the FA Cup match, I think having, 180 minutes under his belt after playing just 100 in like the first 3 months after his arrival, that this could be somewhat of a coming out match.
Basically, Emerson showed us that what we were all wondering on, why the hell is Zappacosta going in with deputizing for Alonso when you brought Emerson?
Yeah, it's funny because looking down the line kind of at next season, it's like, it's a two-match sample size, but it looks like Chelsea have two really good left wing backs and two, I'll say Moses is probably above average, but they have, it's talent heavy on the left.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd honestly say Zappacosta isn't an above average right back. It's just he's a very different right back.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of, how the dimensions... Like,
the big thing, I think Zappacosta is a better right back in a back four.
Yeah, he's more of a traditional guy, whereas Moses obviously is attack-oriented. And he just has the pace to kind of make up for his what he concedes as a defender.
Yeah, because let's be real, Victor Moses is still a winger.
Yeah. He's a winger in a defender's body now. Looking at Swansea, I have Fabianski in FPL. I will be starting him. I probably won't be transferring him out.
Are you going to be starting
now? Because of the amount of saves he makes. No, I will not be.
Yeah.
Looking at my team right now, I'm going with Baines, Maguire, and then hopefully Long will get another start, and that means Naughton is on the bench.
Yes. Basically, Swansea has no assets that you should really be starting in this game, in any format, really, outside of Fabianski.
Yeah, I can't really look at a... There's no really way to justify anyone else. And, I mean, Naughton was the other guy before. He had been doing it in Taga, but with the amount of goals... Like, he does, if they concede maybe one goal, he's still going to put up decent numbers, but I see this being another two, maybe three goals.
I was going to say, I see this being a 3-0 Chelsea win.
Moving on to the team that beat Swansea last weekend. Manchester City will travel to the shit show that is West Ham United. I don't know what to think about them because they are one of the most confusing teams. If you look at it, they have a horrible defeat, then they get two draws, have a horrible defeat, get two more draws, have another horrible defeat. So I guess it's just the David Moyes effect right now.
I mean, he's done enough to keep West Ham up, and that's really all we could ask. We didn't really expect them to be good this year. At this point, I think
that I did.
You hoped.
I thought they were going to be. I thought no. When I
you thought they were going to be good once Moyes was hired.
No. I mean, in the beginning. That's not of the what season.
I'm. We're past that. Oh. Everyone thought West Ham was going to be good at the beginning of the year, but. Okay. After everything that happened.
Yeah, I mean, especially losing Mikel Antonio for the season, that doesn't help. Yeah,
the big thing was just Moyes was coming in to stabilize West Ham. It's been ugly, but he's done that, and they should stay up. And that's enough for him to get an actual extension, at least for next year.
Do you think they stick with him?
Who else are they going to get?
I don't know. That's a good point. But I mean, like, that's just pretty much them signing up for another, you know, like 10 to 12th place finish.
I don't think so, considering they'll be coming in with a healthy Lanzini, a healthy-ish Andy Carroll, a healthy Arnie playing in his best position. Hopefully they bring in João Mario because he has been good in spells.
Yeah.
And then just figure out the goddamn defense and don't sign any more 35-year-old players.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing with them, just noticing from last year under Bilic, I'm not sure if it's the club's medical staff or maybe they need to overhaul their, like, training regime or whatever, but they've had the, like, craziest amount of season-ending injuries every season over the last three seasons.
I don't think a single club has more hamstring injuries than West.
That's my thing. I think it could be something that has nothing to do with the manager. It might be maybe how, because I know Bilic was kind of easy on his players. So I guess it could be that, but I don't know. That's just something it's kind of speculation. It's hearsay, but I don't know. I've been noticing that lately. It's kind of odd. But yeah, pretty much outside of Arnie, there is no FPL value to be found in West Ham. And I think that pretty much does it for them. Before we move on, though, I wanted to say I don't know if Mario will be there next season because from what I saw, he has kind of an expensive release clause. I think they want, like...
Yeah, but they have money. It's the Premier League.
But, I mean, would you pay $30 million for João Mario?
I mean, I wouldn't. But West Ham, probably.
Yeah. The next match we're going to talk about is Manchester United versus Arsenal, but I think it's only fair that we just take a second and just reflect on, like, what the fuck is going on with my Red Devils.
So, the case on both Romelu Lukaku and Alexis Sanchez getting rested at critical times for FPL managers, combined with literally not being able to figure out the Jose Mourinho rotation. And we ended up getting a really fun dialogue on Twitter when we asked, basically, how is this making you feel? And Jay Will on Twitter and Toddy Andor ended up giving us a very good thread. So I'm going to be reading Jay Will's tweets, and Sean will read Toddy Andor's.
Okay. Hopefully this will come out as well as I hope it will.
Okay, so let's begin this. This is, again, impersonating how it makes you feel. Mourinho is that ex-girlfriend who you know is no good for you, but she's always awake at 2 a.m. and is adventurous in the bedroom, which led to a lot of really good memories, but also a lot of really scary ones. But when bar time rolls around, or draft day, you tend to forget.
It's like every Friday you go to bed saying to yourself, it's going to be a huge game. They're going to carry you. Until you see fucking McTominay and whoever else only to calm yourself to pick up Shaw or Jones or Mata or whoever. Then it starts, and they win or lose, and no matter what, it's awful.
But Mourinho is sort of like eating a Dairy Queen Blizzard when you're sort of lactose intolerant. Sometimes it's a really sweet, enjoyable experience that just brightens your day. Sometimes you spend the rest of the day on the shitter, just cursing your own stupidity and your inability to learn from your mistakes.
The kind of, I hope that was kind of funny. I mean, the point we're getting at is, like, Jose Mourinho is bad for Manchester United in terms of fantasy, and it's really, like, put a wrench in my entire season. Because I have to be happy because we're in second place. And if it weren't for Manchester City's amazing everything, we'd probably be neck and neck in the title chase. So I'm happy as a fan, but as a, you know, as a big-time FPL guy who invests in his club, it's goddamn frustrating.
And since it's pretty clear at this point that Mourinho will probably be back for another year, we get to go through this again.
Yeah, so with rotation frustration as the theme, United will look to follow up their FA Cup win over Spurs with another against Arsenal at Old Trafford. I don't know who's going to play. You would think Lukaku would play, but you never know. Mourinho might have got a fortune cookie and interpreted it as he shouldn't start Lukaku. So
you're guessing. I assume at this point, since there's only the FA Cup final, which happens after the season is technically over.
Yeah, it's May 19th, I think.
That United will roll out their big boys for this match, and the big thing is going to be, what do they do with if Valencia misses out? Will we see Lindelof? Will we see Ashley Young rotating to the right side and Luke Shaw starting? We don't know.
Will we see Darmian?
Probably not.
Yeah, I was going to say, will we see insert 17-year-old academy player that no one's ever heard of who impressed at a trial tournament in Glasgow 4 years ago when Mourinho had the same haircut he has now? So what we're getting at is, if you want to know who's going to start for United, wait till the team sheet comes out before the match on Sunday.
Yeah, because we don't know.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm expecting United probably 3-1 against Arsenal. Because
Arsenal's not going
to
play
anymore. Yeah, because Arsenal is doing the Wenger farewell tour. And you know what? It's weird. I never thought I would say this, but I kind of hope that they win the Europa League, because Wenger deserves a good sending off. As much as I don't like Arsenal, and I think that Wenger looks kind of like the creepy version of Big Bird combined with Count Chocula, he does deserve a good sending off after his amazing career there.
And this is another point in this podcast where I will vehemently disagree with Sean, and I hope that Arsenal falls out of the Europa League in the funniest way possible, just because, as a Spurs fan, I do not want to see Wenger leave on a high note.
Yeah, speaking of which, Tottenham will wrap up game week 36 when they host Watford on Monday. Spurs right now have a 6-point lead on Chelsea, and while they do need a win to keep the pace, luckily for them, they're playing Watford, who is winless in their last six.
Bro, I don't even know what's gonna happen in this game.
What's up with Harry Kane? I saw a quote saying he came back too early from his injury.
I mean, we already knew that. Like, he is definitely not up to par. He probably wanted to chase the Golden Boot, and Pochettino really wanted him to play in Champions League, but him coming back was not good for all parties.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell after a bit that it... At first, I was like, he looks a little disinterested, but then it was pretty apparent in the FA Cup match that he was hurt. So, I mean, I don't think that's going to be enough to derail Spurs against Watford, just because they're at home and Watford have been terrible lately.
So, are you finally off the Pereira hype train?
Yeah, I mean, he got hurt. He got a knock. So, I mean, he's scored, I think, 3 goals in their last, like, 4 home games or something. He's been doing well, but as has been his entire career, he always gets hurt. He can't stay healthy.
Yeah, this is a nice game for Spurs where it's start him if you got him, but This could go any way. Like, Spurs were supposed to roll past Brighton, and we saw what happened there.
Yeah, but I mean, Brighton have fight in them. Watford are kind of just a collective of players.
Yeah, I mean, Watford is just treading water.
Yeah, I mean, they have, like, they should get a plaque for having the most adventurous fullbacks in the entire Premier League. Because looking at their heat maps, it's like Jose Holobas looks like he's, you know, the freaking linesman on the other side of the field half the time. But yeah, no, I mean, I think Spurs will get by. Maybe it's going to be closer than... You're going to have to sweat this one out. I think it'll be like 3-1, but it will be a close 3-1.
Yeah, that's fair.
If that makes any sense. All right, moving right along, we're going to get to the part of the show I love, the questions and answers. The first one comes from FPL Hazardous. Which game week 36 matchups do you like the best for streaming players? Specifically, any low ownership players from these matchups. Chuck, can I take this one?
Go ahead.
Well, coincidentally, I happen to write a streaming Toga players column for RotoWorld, so you guys are in luck. As I said earlier, Alex Pritchard's my big punt. He has been creating a ton of chances. Doesn't have any returns in the last 5 weeks, so I think he's due. He's only owned in 8% of leagues right now, so he should be available pretty much everywhere. Another midfielder to look at, Chris Brunt, obviously, because of chance creation against Newcastle. Emerson is the guy I like the most, just because I think Chelsea could keep a clean sheet, and he should also put up attacking peripheral numbers against Swansea. And then up front, if Danny Ings starts, I think he'll score because Stoke have had a bad defense and they're going to be having to go for it to keep their survival hopes alive. And I believe his ownership has actually risen a bit. Right now, Danny is at 11%. He was at 4% last week. So people might have hopped on that, but I think those are really four guys to look at. Is there anyone else that you were thinking of for this week?
Diouf will still be useful for Stoke.
Yes, Diouf too. He's owned in a bit more. I think he's up to, let's see, because I know his ownership dropped while he was out. It rebounded a bit, so he's actually back up to 54%. So
he's right over your cutoff, but still could be available in some leagues.
Yeah, you know, he's put up double digits in the last three matches. So, yeah, if he's out there, I don't see why not, just because he puts it up from... you know, from take-ons and, sorry, losing my train of thought, from take-ons and shots on target when he doesn't score. So he's definitely worth looking at. He's averaging 15.5 points over the last three matches. Moving on, the next question is going to be pertaining to OFPL. It's from Jeremy Spitzberg on Twitter. Who to give the armband to, Lukaku versus Arsenal's U23s or Jesus in Hammer Time?
That's an interesting one because, as always, I don't feel comfortable with Lukaku just because we just had our whole spiel about the Mourinho effect. So I think I gotta keep the armband on Jesus from last week.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm gonna be doing as well. I think that City should be able to score at least three goals. And just given up how that attack works, I mean, Jesus has got a goal and an assist in back-to-back matches. So, I don't really... There's more... I can find more of a reason why Lukaku wouldn't score a goal against Arsenal's U23s than Jesus against pretty much Arnautovic FC. Which I think is like almost a fitting name for them right now. Jeremy also has one more question. Is Cedric worth a look in double game week 37?
So, in double game week 37, Southampton will be away to Everton and away to Swansea City.
So, the silver lining here is that Swansea match could dictate which one of them goes down.
Yeah, but do you want to play a defender in that match?
Well, no. I was going to say, that's why. In Toga, I would be fine with playing him for the double game week. because I don't think, I mean, he's put up enough offensive numbers where he should be able to get out with 12 or 13 points.
Yeah, neither
give up a couple goals.
Neither of these teams will throttle Southampton, so playing their defenders in Taga can work. Obviously, you want assists to actually play him in OFPL, and I don't see that happening.
I see the Everton match, the first one, being somewhat of a carbon copy of the Everton-Newcastle match, with a little bit more attacking prowess from Southampton.
So ugly.
Yeah, not fun in the eyes. I am, however, really hoping that Southampton-Swansea match dictates who goes down, because that'll be a hell of a match to watch. Maybe we could get a couple red cards, maybe bench-clearing fight or something like that. You never know. And especially with them playing Man City in the last week of the season, their season pretty much ends with the double game week.
Yeah, which is wild, but it's a good old schedule.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. I guess before we wrap up today, Chuck, I want to get, who do you think's going to go down?
I'm pegging the relegation zone as is, as who goes down.
Okay. Yeah, I'm obviously going to be West Brom, I think Stoke, and I don't know, because I would be fine with pretty much any of West Ham, Swansea, Southampton going down, because I want Huddersfield to stay up.
See, the issue is I don't want any of them to go down.
I mean, West Brom, they've kind of run their course. They peaked too early.
They had a couple
mid-table finishes.
No, I mean, I'm more referring to the West Ham, Swansea, Huddersfield, Southampton bit.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the schedule, I think it's probably going to, like you said, I think it's probably going to stay the same. However, I guess to make things interesting, I'm saying Swansea, Stoke, and West Brom are going to go down. I think Southampton will find a way. If Charlie Austin is fit, under the pretense that Charlie Austin starts the next four matches.
Yeah. Charlie Austin being fit and able to start for four matches straight, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Well, that just about does it for this week's episode. So until next time, best of luck. Thank you for listening to FPL 360. I'm Sean Sullivan.
And I'm Chuck Booth. And remember, you can find us on Twitter at FPL_360. And you can also find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
May your arrows be green. We'll be right back.